Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we are very, very glad to have you. I think one of the things that we all search for is love in our life. I think it's one of those things that we reach for, we long for, and I think it's one of our basic human needs to be loved. And I'm really excited because I've got a really special guest. You may have read his book. You may have gone to see him professionally as well. He is an amazing man. So if you are, if you haven't checked it out, it's one of the top 100 books on Amazon.com these days. And it is an amazing book. I got a chance to read it. I have to reread it. And I was telling him today, I want to actually pull quotes out of it and just have it where I can ask it a question and just open it up. And just read the quote so I kind of get those answers to myself. And it is an amazing book called Simply Spirit, and it's a guide to spiritual clarity. And it is by the wonderful, the amazing man that I've got in the booth right now and his lovely wife. So for once here, we will actually have some video, which I'm pretty excited, which I'm not sure when that's going to be coming out,
right. But
it will be. And she's very lovely and is recording us as we speak. So not only will the podcast for the audio be available after this show, but you'll have to stay tuned and find out when the video is available. So I'm welcoming Joseph to the show. Joseph Eliezer, welcome to the show. Did I get it? I was so terrified I was going to pronounce that incorrectly, but yay! Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So besides being an amazing, wonderful author who has got a book in the top 100, you also have a private practice as well for psychotherapy.
That's correct.
And you specialize as well in terms of, because I know we were chatting about this in our pre-show chat by email as well.
Right.
In regards to relationships with self.
Absolutely.
And of course, how you connect with yourself, working through with your counselor as well, just any barriers or issues that helps in terms of how you relate to other people.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
How did you get into everything? Because you started off as an intuitive.
That's correct. And so much happened for me in relation to working as an intuitive. I found that it, as it will for you, the listener, and as it, I believe it does for everybody, when following the intuition, it will bring you to places, bring you to people that you may not meet if you don't follow the intuition. And over time, my life really evolved. I was born and raised in Toronto. And honestly, up until maybe 4 months before I left, I was so convinced that I was going to spend the rest of my life in that city. I mean, my family was there. My friends were there. Obviously, my entire history was there at that point. And then when I got on a flight to Vancouver, it was in December of 1992. And the moment I landed at the airport, I greeted the person who was there to greet me. And then left the baggage carousel with my bags. And the moment I stepped foot outside of the terminal of Vancouver Airport, I knew I was home. You know, and these are the kind of life-changing moments that I think can't necessarily be made consciously and known so deeply as when you have these moments of intuitive insight where the information you receive from the self is so solid and it is so pervasive. No need to second guess. There it is. Then you know.
And that's wild, because I was just about to ask you, and I think you read my mind, what, for those people who are not familiar with what the definition of intuitive is,
yes,
I'm going to ask. And
sure.
It's pretty...
Okay. Well, intuition defined is information that arrives into consciousness that bypasses the reasoning process, where suddenly information just appears. And it always arrives with either a gut sensation or other physical sensations that will serve as clues, help you to key into the fact that there's a message that there's something going on inside of you that requires some attention.
Wow. Oh. No, I think it's amazing. You've had some incredible moments in your life. I love the foreword in your book as well, and I'd love for you to share in your own words in regards to just some of the things that happened, like that, the dreams that you had, etc., that led you to putting out to paper things that the beautiful thoughts that you have, which I'm a huge fan. Anybody who follows me on Facebook knows I share quotes daily, and your book is abundant with these amazing inspirational but really thought-provoking, because I know when I was going through them, it was like, ooh. And it was almost like I need to read it in smaller chunk sizes, because it's just amazing.
Right.
Very powerful.
I'm so, not just honored, but to hear the responses, like what you're sharing now of your experience reading it, is never once did I sit down and say to myself, it's time to write. It's time to write a book. And it's time to make it a quote book. Something like that. That never, ever did that occur. What happened was I had a dream one night where I was in a room that was absolutely dark. I could certainly see through my eyes in the dream, but there was nothing around but darkness. And with me was this other presence that I couldn't really identify other than to say that it felt extremely benevolent and was with me. And I looked down. It's going to sound crazy, but this is how it happened.
But it's how it happened.
Absolutely, so. Yeah. I looked down at my palms in the dream, and I noticed that they were bleeding. I can still remember the visual, you know, just like dripping from the center of my hand through my these two fingers.
Wow, okay.
the index and the one beside the pinky. And it was on both hands, and it was dripping down. And I looked up to ask this other force that was with me in the dream. I said to this presence, how do I know that it's real? And the response that I received was, well, you'll never need a blood transfusion. And your blood will always smell like roses. And the only thing I could respond to that impression, to that message was, okay. And then I woke up. I mean, what do you do?
And a lot of people forget those things. So they wake up, they have their dreams, they forget. Whereas it totally changed your life.
Well, it was... Sorry.
It's okay.
The next day, when I woke up from this dream, nothing had changed in my life, really. You know, I looked at my bed sheets to see if there was any, either from my hands, a horse's head, like, all these things go through your mind, right? And there was nothing. And so I didn't think much of it. And during the day, I laid down to do it wasn't really a meditation, but just to have some quiet time in the latter part of the afternoon. And so I was there on my couch. And again, I remember it like it was yesterday. Sometimes you can just, these things that happen to you in your life, they're so present. They stay with you. And this was 1997, so 15 years ago this happened. Anyway, I'm on my couch and I wake up from this, not sleep, but this quiet period. And I look to my right, and in my apartment at the time, there was a window facing a building that was across from me. And when I was looking, I don't know how else to describe it except to say that there was an image that I saw. And the image, of course, was what you're referring to, was the Virgin Mary. Now, there are a couple of things with this, is that imagine two things. One is that this image appeared very much like you see ghosts in film. It's like a three-dimensional image and with color. but it's completely energetic. And yet I'm looking at this through my physical eyes. You know, it's not, I'm not sensing something is there. I am seeing this. And I'm looking at this floating head almost, although it doesn't, there's nothing like, what amazed me about this experience is how non-sensational it all was. I mean, here was this, I'm looking at this thing, and this is the Virgin Mary, and I'm Jewish, right? Understand, right? So in no way was I raised, and I was never raised with the image of the Virgin Mary. She meant very little to me. And quite frankly, prior to this experience, if I had heard people, and you do hear people say, she appeared to me, I saw her, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I really thought these people were crazy, honestly. You know, I thought, you know, sure, she appeared to you. Like, you see her in mirrors and that sort of thing. But there was nothing that I could really relate to, except that this was an experience that was reported by many. And now it was happening
to you.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. I, as I wrote in the book, I don't think I blinked at all while she was with me. And it felt like, imagine sitting with the purest expression of love, the most warm, safe, gentle, softest experience with emotion that you could experience prolonged over a period of time. That's what it was like.
Wow.
So I stared at her. She stared back at me and blinked. And there was no verbal communication except for I received the, call it intuitively. That was how any communication between myself and Virgin Mary happened. And she said that I would experience her twice more before I died, once at the age of 44, and then again at the age of 88. And I'm now 47. And in March of my, and my birthday is in June, and 3 months before I turned 45, you bet she came. It was very brief, but she was there. Going back to the introduction of the book, about 2 or 3 months after these two experiences, I had another dream. And this time I was in a Jewish sanctuary with it's called a tallis. It's a spiritual scarf that Jews wrap around the men to pray with. And I was praying to the divine in my dream. And then that same voice that appeared the night that I had the dream of the bleeding hands said, "Joseph, walk with me. Come with me." So I got up from my chair in the sanctuary and I went to the voice led me to the staircase in the synagogue and instructed me to walk down the stairs, which I did. Mm-hmm. And the stairs led to a tunnel and I was encouraged to walk through the tunnel and I did. And at the other side of that tunnel was another set of stairs, which I was instructed to climb. Mm-hmm. When I got to the top of the staircase, I was in the sanctuary of a church. And that really kind of crystallized it for me. That, to me, that really showed how beneath the surface we're really all related, you know, that really there is no separation other than that which we create through our belief systems. Mm-hmm. And then about 3 or 4 nights after that happened, this book started to come out of me. This book was born, literally. I would have the experience of trying to go to sleep at night, and just before falling asleep, I would get hit with this ball of energy, and you know, you can't sleep when you're feeling angry.
No, it's your body. It's almost like it needs to birth it. It needs to be released.
That's exactly, and that's why the introduction is called the birth. So I would get out of bed, I would turn on the light, and still living in the same apartment, I would leave my bedroom, go into my kitchen living room area, take out some scrap paper, and then start writing I had no idea. It was only after the quotes were expressed that I get to read them and really get a sense of what I was writing. I was the first person to really read the book, I feel, you know, because it wasn't, it just started happening and it, you know, it wouldn't stop. It, you know, three or four quotes would come out. I would look at it. I would read it and think, I like this. I haven't seen it before. Mm-hmm. And I like it. I like it a lot. So let's just start filing it away and see what happens. And about 8 or 9 months later, there was a sufficient quantity, you know, and the experience, I'd be at a movie theater and I would get taken out of the movie theater to write something out. You know, all of this was written completely intuitively, you know, much like the experience at the airport. You don't know until it's actually happening to you. And the thing with intuition also is that people have been, you know, we've been trained either through the media or just in the way that it's told that intuitive thoughts are second class almost, you know. It's like, oh, it's only a coincidence, or it's only a feeling, or it's only, you know, a message. It really doesn't have anything to do with what's happening now. It's okay to ignore. That's, I think, what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. It's okay to ignore your intuition, when in fact ignoring the intuition is really ignoring a part of the self, a very precious part of the self. So that's how this book was born. I'm now writing my fifth book. I'm planning my sixth book. Wow. But this one has, this has been the first one to really see the light of day. And
which is exciting.
Thank you.
It's very exciting and beautiful.
Huh, thank you.
You're welcome. I was going to ask, have you always known that you're an intuitive, or was it something that when you chose to allow yourself the freedom to just trust and let yourself go there? Because sometimes people don't. And was there a certain event in your life that just said, okay, this is cool and it's all right?
Huh. I've known since I was a child that I was very intuitive. When I was young, the thoughts that would come to me based not on what was happening in the immediate environment for me, but things that I felt, like there were two kinds of truths that I became very aware of. One that I could feel and really know fully, and what I learned, you know, like what you learn at school, what you're taught on television, you know, two very different ways of processing information.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was growing up, there weren't places where I could go and have conversations about it, you know, like there were no family dinner tables that I could go to with, you know, say to someone, you know, I felt this was going to happen, or I got the sense that something was up with this person, and then I found out whatever 2, 3, 4 days later that, you know, that I was right about that what I was feeling was correct. So the message that I got very young was, don't tell anyone because they'll think you're crazy. They'll think that this is not something that you share with people. Mm-hmm. Was essentially the message that I received. And at some point, I had made this conscious decision to switch it off, to turn it off, to no longer pay attention to it. And then in my teens, it became reactivated for reasons. To answer your question, it wasn't one event, but somehow it came alive in me again. And then I started studying it. I started learning about intuition. And at the time, the only explanations that were available were in spiritual texts, in religious, or should I say, schools of mysticism talked about that sense of inner knowing. And there was nowhere else that I was getting that information. And that's how it all sort of began for me.
So in other words, there's hope that if for all of us that have, because that's one of the things that you encourage, is for people to really dig deep and find, actually listen to your gut.
Right.
Because if you're not, you're denying yourself. And so are there some, I know obviously through your practice, people are able to work with you and just kind of be, literally get in touch with themselves again and actually hear what they're saying.
Right, right. I think it's a skill that's that is essential for people to master, to be able to discern the voices that they hear inside of them, the thoughts as they're experiencing them. Are they intuition or are they reactions to stimuli, to environment? Are they reactions to circumstances that have happened most likely in the past that are being projected into the present that cause a sense of confusion for people?
I was just going to ask how you can tell the difference from that. Because I was really curious, because I was thinking, for example, say someone has dealt with violence or abuse in their life.
Yes.
And say they're walking down a dark alley and there's trees. And at one point they had dealt with violence because of somebody, say hypothetically, jumping up behind a tree, even though
right.
it doesn't happen as often as, you know, we grow up believing that as women.
of course.
But just even getting rid of those thought processes in terms of realizing that even though your gut's going off, run,
yes.
it may be just because you've been conditioned to believe.
Yeah, I well spoken. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I guess I answered my own question.
Well, I think so much happens in our conscious minds that we're aware of. I'll use the analogy that you gave, walking in a alley, for example, or down a dark road. If something certainly happened to somebody in the past where it may not even be the same environment, but darkness might be the trigger, you know, a sense of being alone might be a trigger. Things that will ignite this fight or flight feeling inside of a person. And then, of course, there's the other side to it. There's the common sense situation where, you know, I'm afraid to walk down alleys at night.
That's true.
Yeah. So and I think that when it comes to mental health, emotional health, and if you want to add spiritual health to the equation, to be able to look after the self in the best way possible, integrating all of these various perspectives. You know, I think that we're the ideal is to be able to integrate your conscious self with your unconscious self. And with that, within that, therein lies the intuition as well. Intuition being, at least the scientific explanation for intuition is that it is a function of the unconscious. It's messages from the unconscious, essentially messages from ourselves to ourselves, going from unconscious into consciousness, getting our attention. And that's what these intuitive feelings are. I mean, that's one of the top jobs of intuition, if you will. For a lack of a better way of putting it in the moment. I hope that was clear.
No, that makes a lot of sense. The other thing I wanted to touch on is because you mentioned sometimes people come see you because they're unhappy or in their relationships sometimes, which I think all of us have experienced that in one shape or form or the other.
Right.
And and of course it has to start with the self as well, where it's the why.
Right.
And almost if there is a certain key processes in regards to taking somebody through and even painting a picture, which can be a composite, because I know because of confidentiality, you can't share specific examples, but if even just calling somebody John or Jill or something like that, if that would be all right in terms of how you'd lead them through if they came in. And of course, it would depend on the situation. But
Right.
Yeah.
With every situation, every individual, there are many layers to every issue that people come in to address in therapy. And it is a process on the one hand, but I think the important thing to really understand is that when working with another person, if your trust has been violated in the past, no matter what the situation, then reestablishing trust with another individual doesn't happen overnight. If you, for example, if you as a child had your trust broken. You were raised in a home where your primary caregivers weren't functioning adequately, you know, or because really that's all they have to do. They have to be there in a way that it's at least decent, mm-hmm. you know, to give an individual a real chance. Yes. To develop some healthy ways of coping within themselves. If that didn't occur in childhood, or if they were in a relationship where they were betrayed, I this is just the example that comes mm-hmm. to mind, then unconsciously it's quite possible that the individual would make a decision that relationships aren't safe.
And so they're attracted to those types of relationships that aren't safe because it proves to them what their core belief system, at least, I don't know if core is the right word for that.
Sure.
But where it's what they believe to be true. So the world is going to basically reflect back everything they believe to be true. So if relationships aren't safe, well, that's what's going to come in abundance in their
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scary thought.
Oh, yeah. You know, what I loved about your example is it really shows just how powerful we are as people. We have the power to be able to create an environment like that where, as you put it, unsafety or lack of trust is the underlying thread behind which people experience relationships. You're shaking.
Yeah, I just got chills. It's creepy. But I can see it.
But also with that, we also have the power to bring change to that,
yes.
to bring some realization and experience growth. And it is often, it's interesting because on the one hand, it can be a frustrating or a challenging experience, and yet a real, if it's done properly, mm-hmm. An extremely potent growth experience that you learn almost as if therapy is successful, then the pattern that you've undone going through the process of undoing this, getting in touch with that belief that is beneath your mm-hmm. relationships and how you perceive the world, if you will, the process of unraveling that belief and then the tools that you gain by having the experience of creating something more substantial, something that is tested over time, something that you experience some, call it awakening, or if you will, moving more into the present in relation to how you can experience relationships differently in the moment versus having that cycle that you've experienced repeated. Having that experience of awakening is one that you'll be able to put into every circumstance within your life and experience that transformative both process, but also the feeling of transformation and feeling like you're the one who's creating the change. I think that's the real powerful stuff.
I think so, too. Huh. I think that's the big key. It's one of the things why I like cognitive behavioral therapy, because of the fact just by changing your thought, you can change everything. And
right.
sometimes, I know when I first discovered it, I realized it was one of the most powerful things because when right in the midst of the overwhelm, it's like taking that deep breath and going, actually, I have a choice. I can change the way I think about something.
Right.
And as soon as I change that, whatever I'm feeling, it's because feelings are they're tangible in a lot of ways where it does change and it's constantly moving
right.
its energy. So.
Right, right. I think you bring up a very important point, this idea of feelings always changing. These are things that run through you as mm-hmm. you experience life day to day, hour to hour. And think about, for a moment, how much energy is put into not feeling a feeling, not having an experience.
It's true.
Okay. So with all of that energy that's being...
suppressed.
Is
denied.
A great word for it. Yeah.
Or numbed out.
Okay. Numbed out. Absolutely. If over time you're able to work with someone who can help you to feel safe in moving through some of these emotions, giving you the opportunity to claim them for yourself, you're going to feel a lot more empowered. You're going to feel a lot braver, more brave, stronger, more confident. And as that confidence builds, you take that into the world with you, into your relationships, your immediate relationships, your relationships with your the people that you work with. What is not a relationship, really? You know, you're the, and of course, as you put it earlier, the relationship with the self being the primary, the most important.
Well, it's going to be key, because if this isn't taken care of, it's really hard to give in relationships. And as I started the top of the show, where it's just like, I think all of us, and I'm going to go back to the Maslow's hierarchy of needs,
sure,
where I think everybody for self-actualization needs to feel loved and respect in their life.
Yes.
And it starts with self, because if there isn't that core value there, like in terms of the self-love, the self-care, all of that, and by especially listening to ourselves, which as you mentioned with the intuition, and I'm going full circle here, it's really hard to connect with another human being. So I guess that's going to be my next question is, okay, as someone starts to do that work, because obviously there's going to be shifts, and I like to think of it as the caterpillar, and I'm going to quote Richard Bach here, okay, with the caterpillar, where sometimes it's almost where it seems like it's the end of the days, but that's right before it's going to evolve into the butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And as humans, sometimes we think it's the end of the world. Like I think back and I read my teen angst diaries sometimes,
yes,
and I'm like, wow, everything was so Romeo and Juliet, where it was...
Yeah.
It was really passionate, and not that I'm not passionate now,
sure,
but it was just different. And how we change as human beings, and how does that change as we change ourselves? Obviously, the relationship's going to evolve. And if our partner's is uncomfortable, say, going for therapy, etc., is there anything that you recommend in terms of being able to get them, even if it's incremental steps, to encouraging them to do self-care as well?
Sure. I think, the first thing that comes to mind is to pay a visit to a bookstore. Go into a wonderful store like Banyan Books, for example, or any bookstore for that matter, but perhaps walking through the aisles, and usually a title will stand out for you. And many people, when they have that experience, they feel like, okay, this is the one that's calling me. This is the title that I'm meant to read, or this is something that could maybe feed me. Or even if it's unconscious motivation, where you're just scanning and suddenly something just pops out, then I would say that might be a place to begin. Another way to do it would be to spend some time. I recommend that everyone take time to spend time just with their thoughts, their own internal process. Spend an hour, go for a walk, just be with nature for a while. Having that experience of being without distraction, which of course is getting harder and harder to do, right? But without the cell phone, even a workout can be a spiritual experience or a growth experience. I think in the book there's a quote about the grocery store, you know, can also serve as a place of worship if you're purchasing with the idea of wanting to expand your experience of health. What do you need to feed yourself?
To nourish your soul.
Right.
Yourself.
Right, right. So little things, you know, can together create a massive change. But to try to go after massive change, profound change from the beginning, is it sets up a situation that's even more difficult to deal with. As we were talking just before we went on air, I spent a lot of years working in the addiction community. And when people were so fed up with being addicted to heroin, for example, they would want to kick heroin, every other substance that they were using, methadone and cigarettes and alcohol.
At the same time.
All at the same time, absolutely. And then, of course, there's a crash that happens afterwards, and that's when very often, most often, relapse occurs. So I think it's really important to be gentle with yourself, to do it one step at a time. I think the greatest change happens that way, just with working with what's in front of you. If it's in a relationship that you're experiencing the challenge, are you willing to, able to challenge yourself while being in that relationship. Meaning, if there's a heated situation and your usual behavior is to get up and walk away, to leave in the middle of an argument, for example, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Can you challenge yourself to be with that desire to leave, but stay? Stay for an extra 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Stay until at least there's a moment of calm between you and your partner, if that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in these little things. It's in these little challenges that produce the biggest results.
So trusting that there will be a shift that will occur,
mm-hmm.
in other words, as opposed to running from things.
Right, right.
Which is hard when our cortisol levels are super duper high,
right.
Just in terms of, as you're mentioning earlier, we're on all the time. We've got our cell phones, our email, etc.
Yes.
All I can say is I'm going to encourage people, and this is a shout out to John Neuenberg, if you're listening out there, with W5 Coaching. Get a great, great business coach or a life coach as well, to work in conjunction to mark out some time with a default diary or something.
Yeah,
which can be really helpful in conjunction to having someone wonderful like you.
Oh, thank you.
So, you're welcome. Hmm. I keep thinking back in terms of those incremental shifts. This just sounds so cheesy and totally show my age.
Oh.
But when I was a kid, I remember my mother reading a Dear Abby letter to me because she thought it was really sweet.
Okay.
Where it was a man writing into Dear Abby where he had wanted to divorce his wife, was completely unhappy. And it was the letter he wrote to her 6 months later where he had, Dear Abby's advice to him when he said that he wanted to get divorced, etc., was to totally romance her because it would make it harder for her when he finally dumped her. And what ended up happening was they ended up totally falling in love again,
right.
Ended up going on a second honeymoon and renewing their vows.
Right.
Which I always thought that was a really cool thing. Which my mom, I think she read that to me when I was 6 or 7 years old.
Huh.
Which I always thought, you know, in terms of the, I guess just in terms of as an image of when one person shifts, sometimes it, because that it's automatically will shift and evolve the relationship.
Right.
That perhaps sometimes things do happen. And I guess I'm a geek and I love fairy tales. So.
Well, I
think it does happen.
What I loved most about your story was that your mother was, at this age, she was giving you a taste of what it is to resolve conflict in a relationship, and simultaneously spending the time with you, reading to you, where you could hear about the conflict resolution, but also be in the warmth of your mother's care at the same time, really grounding this experience for you, hopefully, that was consistent throughout growing up. And when I think about what I know of you now, that you work so hard to foster an environment of safety for the people who come to your beauty nights, where they could lose themselves for a time, where they can have the experience of being cared for. And my guess is that when your mother was reading this to you, that may have been one of the feelings that you experienced. That's what I'm thinking. I would feel cared for.
Yeah.
All of that. Yeah. Yeah. So I
thank you.
Yeah. I thank you for sharing that.
Are you welcome? No, I really believe that, I guess with relationships as well, I think of it as elationship as well.
Elationship.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Where you relate to someone, but there's also the elation where you feel really good,
right.
as well. And
right.
not just the honeymoon period.
Absolutely.
But just that evolves and it just develops that wonderful richness as relationships carry on and the wonderful friendships fill out, etc.
Right. Right.
It's just really neat as people go through the different phrases of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it does change. So.
Right. And hopefully strengthens.
Yes.
As these changes occur, with every stage, is it possible to bring greater understanding? Is it possible to look with a greater sense of compassion, especially when you're being, when you're not feeling particularly compassionate at that time? And that's one of the things that I think psychotherapy is very good at, helping people to identify the various feelings and thoughts that people have while they're feeling this lack of compassion. Mm-hmm. What does it consist of? And are there ways that you can approach it internally so that even if that feeling of warmth doesn't return, at least there's no tension that's going out to your partner, you know, no anger or hostility or other emotions that none of us like to receive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If someone is, and it was interesting when you're talking about the process that you take people through in terms of with psychotherapy, mm-hmm. I know you'd mentioned the word
psychodynamic.
Right. Thank you. I was going to say psychodynamite, and I'm like, that's not right.
Psychodynamite.
Sounds like a commercial, doesn't it?
No, but I am so going to share that.
If their core belief is in terms of that I can't trust anybody because yes. they've had that experience really early on in their formative years or early on, what would you recommend? Because it'd probably take time in terms of when you're working with someone, which mm-hmm. I've always thought of, and jump in and correct me, but I've always thought a good psychotherapist, it's someone who is a guide who can reflect back and
right.
help you see
absolutely
and connect with that with yourself to start with. But when you're starting with somebody who has a lot of trust issues to start with because they have felt let down, etc.
Yes.
What are some key things in terms of if someone is looking to connect, whether they're in Vancouver, which would be great,
right.
or someone who's listening perhaps in Europe or something,
right.
and they may need to find somebody locally, unless you Skype.
I don't, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to make sure I've got your question
correct. Sure.
Yeah. Can you
want to when you're working with somebody who has trust issues to start with, mm-hmm. and maybe a little bit fearful and not quite sure what psychotherapy is, even though they've heard about it on the show, they've watched your video because you've got some great video footage as well,
right.
or they've read your book, but they're not quite sure when engaging, like some key things that they should be looking for to make sure it's a good fit.
Right.
And what are some of the things that you look for to make sure it's a nice fit so you're not having to, I don't know if you've ever fired somebody, but I know that's confidential.
Right, right, right.
But you know, I don't know if that helps.
Right. I think it's very important. I invite people to, I offer a free 15-minute telephone consultation for people that I've never worked with before.
Mm.
And that's one way of breaking down the first barrier. You know, what is the conversation going to feel like? The individual who's contacting me, that's usually, if not by email, our point of first contact.
Okay.
And then from that, does this seem like something they would like to pursue further? Do they feel they would like to come in and sit for an hour and see what it feels like? And then from there, usually I'll let people know what they can expect within the first few sessions so that they've got some sense of what they're going to talk about, perhaps at least in the beginning, just, you know, initial, you call it an assessment phase where beginning to ask about different their upbringing, what it was that brought them into session, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, they can usually get a feel for whether or not they would like to continue. And we'll talk about what that would look like and address some of the issues right off the top. You know, cost per session, how often we'd see each other, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And like anything, your relationship with your therapist is a relationship that you're entering into. There are two people that are there. So is it going to work for you? Some people go to my website, they read some of the blogs that I've written, or like you say, they watch the videos and they say, no, this is definitely where I'd like to be. And they know.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, it's a process of exploration. But even within that learning, there should be some therapeutic, that in itself could be a therapeutic experience,
mm-hmm.
just to see, is this person right for you? Perhaps what the person coming in would learn would be able to identify some of the points that they internally should be looking for when they're looking for other relationships, beginning other relationships, you see. Mm-hmm. So duplicating the experience outside. If they're looking for a significant other, what are they looking for internally that makes them feel like, yes, this may be a good partnership to enter into, mm-hmm. a good position, job to enter into. And any other relationship. I'll just leave it at that, you know, absolutely.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense because I think that's really key where it's got to be that foundation and trust. And that was my next question I was going to ask is, Vancouver's got a reputation of being hard to date in. And I think in this world where a friend of mine joked about it when Plenty of Fish first came out, which is an online dating site,
right, right.
that it was like going online shopping, where if you had a date with somebody, it didn't feel so great. You could just basically click on and see all these people that were available who were looking for a relationship or dating or intimate encounters or whatever.
Okay.
And with our world evolving like that, one of my questions was going to be, I've had a lot of friends, some of them might be listening right now, who haven't been in a relationship for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder if it's they've gotten so focused on self-care where and thinking that they need to fix themselves to that degree that they can't actually go out and connect with somebody.
Right.
Or if they do, it's almost like that belief system where it's not going to happen. Vancouver's too hard to date. Vancouver's right. an isolating town. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Any advice for those who believe that they're perpetually single?
I don't think I've ever been asked that question before.
Oh, okay.
Any advice for people who are...
who believe that they're I guess I just answered my own question, perpetually single, where it's about the thought process. And if they believe they're always going to be single, they probably will be.
Okay. Well done. Well spoken.
But if there's any other thoughts that you'd like
sure.
to add to that, I didn't mean to answer that.
But. Right. I would say that there is a certain amount of risk that's involved when it comes to meeting people in however it's done, be it online or, you know, at a social function. And there is, going back to what we were talking about earlier, this idea about intuition, I think that's a wonderful marker in know that with every person that you meet, there will be a gut response that you'll experience, and you ask for advice. My advice would be to listen for it, to listen to it. It's not going to lead you astray. If you're meeting somebody and there's a feeling that says there's something not right here, there's something that's off, there's something, I can't identify it, but there's something that's going on inside of me, that's your indicator. You know, that in itself is enough to guide you as far as what your decision should be in that moment. Mm-hmm. And if you're not feeling that way, then maybe this is an opportunity to take a risk and let the risk be a small risk. You don't have to go spend an entire evening with someone if your idea is to just perhaps meet for an hour just to get a better sense for who this person is. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because when you were talking about self-care, it made me think of, on the one hand, obviously, I think without self-care, you have nothing. You know, there needs to be that in your life.
But almost using, I guess I'm referring more as a crutch where...
Yeah. And if you're socially isolated, but are engaged in an enormous amount of self-care, then that might be an indication that something is off balance, that there is something off. Because ideally, you want to be interacting with the world socially. You want to be, you want to have a sense of community. You want to be able to have relationships, friendships, where you're experiencing nurturing and giving nurturing to others. And if that's not accessible for you, then that might be something to explore with another.
Yeah. And then my last question is going to be, well, two more questions.
Okay.
Is for those who perhaps might be in the singledom, but are almost, I'm going to say, in terms of addicted to the search for love, where they're sometimes out, sometimes 5 dates a week, and there are people who I do know who are like that, mm-hmm. and they almost describe whoever they're going out with, like the flight attendant, the carpenter, the Wolverine, where they've almost...
The Wolverine?
Yeah, like Hugh Jackman from X-Men. Okay. But where each time it's almost like where there's almost a nickname as opposed to calling somebody who what their actual name is. And it's almost a disconnect where it's almost that part that is in the back of the head that's disconnected to the and almost recording it so they can tell all their friends and share it on their blog, etc. Mm-hmm. About what a weird date it was, etc. Where they're almost doing it and there's this disconnect, so they never actually fully engage and are present on the date.
Right. Right.
It's always about what's the story going to be afterwards.
And I see.
It's a little bit twisted, but I've been there myself. I've had other friends. I'm lucky, thankfully, I have an amazing partner now. Mm-hmm. But I've had a lot of girlfriends, especially in the late 20s, early 30s, that kind of go through that cycle.
Right.
And it's all about that. But it's a disconnect. But men as well. I've got quite a few male friends who do the same.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And is there a question that
it is? Yes, okay. In terms of where people become almost addicted to the storytelling, where it is, they're still social, they're still doing lots of their own self care,
right?
But never actually invest themselves emotionally when they actually go out on a date for somebody and actually meet somebody for coffee, etc.
Right,
where they almost seem to believe it's not going to happen.
Right,
so
right.
That's just to have it as an entertaining, engaging story to tell my friends so they can laugh.
Right, right. When I heard the story, it made me think about authenticity.
Hmm.
And I'm reminded that I think it could be extremely frightening to go out into the world and speak, be yourself. I mean, like to be present, especially in the company of another, and experience the hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever it is, for as it's happening, when you talk about these, the Wolverine and the
carpenter,
thank you,
the flight attendant,
right. With that, I'm guessing comes with a preconceived set of ideas. This is the carpenter, and as a result, the carpenter behaves this, does that, will choose this over that, without potentially having the experience of witnessing what choices this person will make or not make.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you put it, a way to keep the self separate. I'm guessing that at least some part of that has to do with this aversion, this thing, I don't want to be hurt. I'm not going to go out there. I'm not going to get my heart smashed. I'm not going to invest in another relationship that's not going to work out. You know, that, you know, thoughts of that nature that very often are stemmed from past experience. But again, don't have to be what's going to happen tomorrow. So much of it depends on the person who creates the story. And then are they willing to process their way out of that story to be able to let go of the need to create these classifications where they put people in as a way to feel, and I guess this really speaks to the situation entire, to feel a sense of control.
Mm.
You know, so that they know no matter what, they're going to be okay.
Yes.
Relationships, in order to thrive, require both parties to be vulnerable, certainly honest, and certainly to come to a place where they're both recognizing that both partners, or partners might be too advanced in situations like this, but both people going out are going out because on both sides there are needs that they're hoping are going to be met. And I think it takes a lot to be able to acknowledge that,
mm-hmm.
And speak from that place, not necessarily share immediately what these needs are, but at least they'd be aware that, you know, this is why I'm going, this is why I'm doing it. That may allow an individual to at least take a different step forward outside of that circular process, if you will.
That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, good. Okay.
So what is next for you? Because you've got this amazing book, Simply Spirit, and for anybody who is just tuning in right now, it's in the top 100 for Amazon,
right,
which is exciting.
Thank you.
You've got a wonderful thriving practice as well,
right,
in Vancouver.
Right.
So what's next for you? What's the next chapter?
I'm going to try to conquer public speaking next.
Okay.
That's my next. That's the next one, the next hill to climb. I'm hoping that my second book, which is written, will be out within the next year and a half. If you'd like to receive notification of it, you can certainly go to my website and fill out a form to so that I could send you information on it if you're interested in receiving it. But those are the two big things that I'm hoping to achieve over the next while.
And for those who haven't had a chance to check out your website, do you want to just plug it and spell out your last name for?
Thank you. Yes, the website is Joseph ELIEZER.com. The book Simply Spirit is available at Chapters Indigo. It's available at Banyan Books. It's available online everywhere, and it's also available as an ebook in every format. So, for the Amazon Kindle, and Kobo Books has it, and Barnes and Noble has it. So it's widely available.
I'm going to encourage everybody, though, to actually get a... I'm going to sound very environmentally unfriendly, but there's something beautiful about a paper copy. Because I really love that idea in our pre-show chat where just ask a question wherever you're at, close your eyes, open it, and let it open to the page that you're meant to read that day.
Right, one quote per page.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I could see that being very beautiful. And actually, a mutual friend of ours, John Nirenberg, I'm going to quote him again.
John Franklin.
He also mentioned Benjamin Franklin actually wrote about his values every day. And I could actually see for anybody who's into journaling, which I fully encourage if somebody
absolutely
is trying to get in contact with yourself, it's really key. I could see just asking a question at the beginning of the day, opening up to that page, thinking of just how that quote works in your life in terms of what you're meant to learn, and actually just popping that at the top of your journals and then writing whatever you're meant to write that day, whatever's supposed to flow.
Huh.
I could see that being really cool and doing that for, well, at least a year until the next book comes out, which I'm very curious about. Joseph, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It was a thrill to be with you and to be here tonight. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and a super hot voice. And... He's got his runners on tonight. Sometimes he's got really amazing shoes. His shoe collection rivals mine, and I have to say, he's got amazing shoes. I love it. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back next week at the Sexy Hour of 10 o'clock. Have a wonderful night, everyone. Bye-bye.